This show is sponsored by ODYS Global. Make sure that you do sign up and get a free $100 bonus by checking out ODYS Global's Age Domains or Done For You affiliate websites. Hello and welcome to today's podcast, where I'm joined by Jana Krekic. I couldn't even say it without laughing, Jana, sorry. So, Jana Krekic from YLT Translations. Jana, thank you very much for coming on. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Same, Greg. Thank you so much for having me. And you totally nailed my last name, much better than 90% of the presenters out there. So,
I did double check it before we went on here, guys, just like, how do you say it again? Because I've done it so many times where I've had people from all over and I just assumed their surnames what it is, and sometimes it comes out horrifically wrong. So always got to double check. But before I let Jana give us an introduction to herself, I met Jana out at Affiliate World Dubai. We randomly met in one of the parties. Where did we first meet again? Was it the Monkey Bar that night?
It was actually the official VIP speakers pre-party before the conference. Yeah,
so that one, and then we bumped into each other several other nights after that, and Jana and her... Is it husband, Lazar, or is it partner?
It's a husband.
Husband. So Jana's lovely husband, Lazar, was also there, and he will be on the podcast next week as well. But we met them, had a good few nights out, and we were all speakers at Affiliate World Dubai, had a great time, but... I've actually reached out to Jana, not because we were drinking buddies, but a lot of people have actually said to me, like, Jana, that Jana and Lazar, they look as if they had interest in talks. Do you know? Because we obviously posted pictures and all that, and they're like, it's people were doing the research, and they're like, oh, fuck, you know, what was she talking about? What does she do? So this is going to be where I'm going to show you what she does, or she's going to show us what she does. So, Jana, for anyone who doesn't know what you do, can you just give us a brief background of what it is you actually do as a service?
Right. So we started as like an e-commerce, like international content expansion sort of agency. And we sort of niche down to Amazon only now. So what we do is we help sellers expand to all Amazon global marketplaces, and we do all sorts of content for them, but like SEO optimized content that gets ranked and drives sales on Amazon. And we know how Amazon algorithm works. Similar to Google, probably a little bit more simple, but we basically, you know, help you to translate your listing copies into sales. That's it.
So that's on Amazon itself, right? Yeah. So if I've got loads of products, it's on Amazon itself. It's not to be associated with Amazon affiliate websites, or do you still help with that stuff as well?
No, this is currently like what we mostly do, like our bread and butter right now are Amazon listings, like on Amazon, on other affiliate websites. We used to do this like before, but we kind of got like a really good niche going on. So I decided to kind of go like all in with the Amazon listing translations and other content and relation with Amazon. And that turned out to be a really good decision. So yeah, we keep doing that.
Interesting. You've always got to niche down and see what works and stuff like that. But interestingly, just something I want to pick your brains about. Obviously, you said you understand how Amazon's algorithm works and all that kind of stuff. And as an SEO guy, I believe I understand how Google's algorithm works. I'm not sure if we can ever claim we actually know, but hey, we have a good grasp on it. Now, in Amazon, what's the difference? Like, obviously, you've worked with e-commerce people and you've worked with all sorts of different people. Like, is there serious volume on Amazon, like in terms of search? Is that still like something that's naturally bringing in a lot of traffic?
Yes, so a lot of people are like now, you know, like the paid traffic versus like organic, and they're like organic is dead and blah blah blah. And I'm sure you also get that a lot, you know, it's just always like this internal struggle with these two different channels. And from what we've seen, so we do like a couple of thousands of products every month. We work with very, very big brands. So what we've seen is actually like when you go international expansion, you know, speaking of that, like if you want to go to the US or Germany or like any other big Amazon marketplace, if you don't fix your content at the very beginning, it's going to do well because like Amazon gives you this so-called like honeymoon period where you get a little bit more of the ranking juice and like you get a little bit more than you deserve also in terms of sales. But then like 6 months later, when you don't get any more sales and when your review score drops, that basically means that there's something off with your content. So content might be the first thing that people focus on, but you know, and don't think that's like that relevant. But at one point, content does get to be very, very, very relevant, because this is how you connect with your audience. It's all about, you know, like storytelling, branding, all the keywords, and you know, and a lot of times people ask me like, so for instance, like when it comes to like a product listing copy, like what's more important, like a really good copy or really good keywords? So basically, like there's like tons of brands that have like really good copies, but they have like zero keywords. So they're like, there's like really no point of like having a fantastic copy without any high converting keywords. And also like something, you know, what's also important is that people just use high search volume keywords, which are not necessarily relevant for what they want to sell. And they're just like, oh, it's like high search volume keyword, let me just use it. When there are like so many other parameters, like what is a high converting keyword, right? It's not only like if it's a high search volume keyword or not. So there's like tons of things, and content is still relevant. I say that content is still king, definitely.
It's the same with SEO. It's it is what it is. But one thing with SEO that I just want to ask as well, like with SEO, and I had a look around your blog and I noticed you were talking about mistakes that people are making and you know the German language and all this kind of stuff. Now with SEO, now the UK and the US are the most competitive spaces or the most aggressive algorithm, if you like, when it comes to SEO. Is that the same with Amazon? Are there lesser Amazons, if you like, that are easier to manipulate, like ones that are maybe not as advanced, or is it all the same thing?
It is similar, especially because like recently, like the last 7 or 8 months, like Amazon has been starting to impose like all sorts of rules. So if you want to do like any sort of like rank manipulation or like any sort of like black hat techniques, like all of the like super URLs, like everything that was allowed earlier, they kind of banned all of that. So like right now, it's becoming more and more like it's harder to rank for the specific keyword. It's more challenging to find a good keyword that your competitors are not using and stuff like that in your content. But it's basically the only way how to build it right now. So you cannot, I mean, you can manipulate it and get away with it, like the search, find, buy methods and stuff like that. But it's highly unrecommendable not to do it right now because it's not going to lead into like, you know, easy sales like it was before. Because right now it's kind of really, really restricted and you can get banned easily. And the competitors are just, you know, insane on the UK and the US, basically.
It's very like Google. You do too much and you get slapped.
Yeah, well, right now, basically, Amazon doesn't get you do like 1%. They're gonna be like really like super strict, like whatever is like you're doing against TOS, you're done, literally like that. Especially in the US, like the US is like it's like a it's a different sort of beast, like when compared to the UK, you know, like US is like basically where everybody wants to be, and everyone was like, okay, I'm gonna launch my product. Everybody launches in the US, and then they go to other marketplaces because they either fail or maybe, you know, like the market gets saturated by the products or too many competitors. And then everybody tries to go somewhere else. Because what's interesting, like when it comes to like Amazon in Europe, like you can still get away with tons of things. Like there are still things that you could manipulate, like you can use like caps lock and stuff like that. In the US, you cannot like pull that like anymore. Like you're done. There's like literally nothing. So Europe is sort of like, like a year behind the US when it comes to all of these rules. And I still think that some of the rules that are imposed in the US will never go live in Europe. So you can still do a lot of things that are not allowed in the US anymore.
So let's say someone got their Amazon listings done by someone like yourself, say 2 years ago, and you've got all of these kind of black hat techniques that are done. When they launch this, are these guys still okay to rank, or are they fucked now that these updates are out? How does it work? Are you know the people that have previously had someone like yourself to optimize, what happens with their existing listings when these changes come in?
You know what? It really depends. Like, there are like some listings that are called like grandfathered listings, and then they're like super, super old. And then you're like, when you come across a certain listing, you're like, how is this even possible? Like, how do they allow this? So sometimes you kind of get away with it if you don't touch your listing. These are like listings that haven't been touched in a while, and they can still fly sometimes. But like more and more right now, they're gonna like, you know, see like, oh, okay, use this word or that word. Especially like, you know, ever since COVID started with the face coverings, masks, like, you know, whoever had that was kind of taken down, even though it was like 3 years old or something like that. So it's kind of really, it really depends. Like Amazon is not doing that fantastic job of that. But if you're still like now unsure, like, you know, I don't know what to do with my listing, and like I might have something that's kind of really kind of might raise a red flag right now, just don't touch it, whatever you do, because this is how you're gonna set the alarm off, and they're gonna be like, hey, so we see you and we're taking you down. So that's just, you know, something that you should be super, super careful with right now.
So you mentioned that obviously there's a lot of keywords and stuff that have to go into the listing and stuff like that. Now, again, with SEO, I'm only an SEO. I've never even optimized an Amazon product listing, but purely thinking from an SEO point of view, do you guys do a lot of like click-through rate manipulation, sending traffic to certain products? Does that help on Amazon? Because it does in Google, but I'm just curious to know if that is a thing that you play with.
But so now when you do like an Amazon product, and it get ranked on Google actually. So that's also one of the reasons why you want to do the good, like the SEO in terms of like Amazon's algorithm SEO. So basically, like when someone types like a long tail keyword on Google, your Amazon listing can show up if you really have it in the your listing, and that's, and then you just click on the product. We don't sell anybody to anything third party, whatever, and then it goes to the listing. Basically, the ideally what would be is like if someone uses like a really like a three-word long tail keyword, your product that you're selling on Amazon will show up on Google if you did like a really good job content-wise, because they're kind of more connected now than ever. But basically, when it comes to like the content, this is all you have. This is just kind of content thing, and then there's like no click-through funnels or anything like that. You just type the keyword, and the product shows up or doesn't show up. What's really interesting, like when it comes to like other languages, or even comparing like the US to UK, what people don't know is like we recently had like a seller, and she was selling diapers like for kids in the US. And then in the UK, she was just like, I'm just gonna use this listing and, you know, use it like in the UK. And then she ranked for wrong thing, because diapers is like what you say for like adult diapers, right? You say nappies, or diaper bag is like a changing bag. So there's like tons of stuff that people get wrong just because they don't think you have to kind of localize your content a little bit and stuff like that. So basically, like we're not doing anything which is black hat, and that's why I'm still here, because they banned like so many service providers lately because of the black hat things, and literally no one got away. I think the only people that didn't get banned were the ones that are like based in like Romania service providers, or like other you know, countries in Europe maybe, but the ones that are in the States, they're pretty much done. So Amazon kind of just really started following the rules like a lot and cutting those who are not respecting those.
That's a pain. That is a pain.
Yeah.
But you're still going. That's the main thing. Now, going on to the services and stuff that you've got there, and you know, if anyone does want to see what Yana's services are, the link will be below. But when we look at your website, and you've got things like Pan European Combo Package, translate your listings to four marketplaces. So UK, Germany, France, Spain, and Italy, for example, you're going to go in and translate that. But that, how does it work? Like, what if someone's literally got thousands of products? Is that the same price?
We have a, first of all, we have a very big, for those of you who are listening to this, I am not translating any of this. So I have a team of 82 people that scales, regularly about every 2 or 3 months. And they handle all of that, all of the content. So basically, and we can handle like 1,000 products and stuff like that. And of course, like if you have like 1,000 products or maybe even more, because as I said, like we work with some brands that have like so many products in their catalogs. Like, of course, we offer like bulk discount and, like pricing is pretty much negotiable. Those are the pricing on the website that people, when they buy things on a website, that's what they get. But usually, like when people talk to me and then explain me about their brand and stuff like that, like we offer really good to get discounts, which we can also do, of course, now for all of your listeners. But it's a very fast turnaround time. And basically, what's really specific about what we do is that those people that work for me, they're not just translators, they're also marketers. A lot of them come from like really, highly respected SEO agencies throughout the world because they're like Germans, French, Spanish. And then you just gonna, you optimize them for Amazon content because it's like, like if you do like Google ads, Amazon ads like PPC, it's nothing. It's very much basic when compared to Google. And this is also how like SEO is on Amazon versus Google. So it's pretty much easy to kind of train people into being like an Amazon translation sort of like a niche expert. And we had a couple of competitors at the very beginning, like 3 years ago, but nobody did that at this much. Like we kind of decided to kind of niche down. I was like, we're doing like e-commerce, we were doing like Shopify, we were doing like tons of other like content, like using SEMrush and like other tools like that. We still get some portion of that in other languages, but kind of Amazon is our niche. And people really like when we niche down. They're like, oh, I love that. And they're like, why don't you do anything else? I'm like, I don't want to. Because we're gonna choose this niche and be best at it. And they're like, oh, okay, this is interesting. People really love that. And it was kind of my like, let's just do some A/B testing and see how this goes. And we haven't like done anything apart from that for the last 2 years, I think, just Amazon. And we're also like, working with Amazon directly and with like tons of these brands, and which still shows that content is relevant no matter what other people say. It's not like the only thing, but it definitely helps your sales.
Exactly. You mentioned SEMrush a minute ago, and that was going to be one of my questions. You mentioned on there you do keyword research and all that kind of stuff. Is there like a SEMrush for Amazon, like a place where you do research that says, or do you use SEMrush? I'm just curious to know what sort of data you're using to come up with the, the plan of action.
So earlier, I think about like 5 or 6 years ago, Amazon tools for keyword research were not that sophisticated. So we basically use like anything from the Google keywords, like Google Planner, SEMrush, like everything that will get you ranked on Google, because like there's nothing more you could do. But now there's a very, very good tool. It's called Helium 10. That's basically your go-to SEMrush for Amazon. And it works for all international marketplaces. Is there are like tons of add-ons you can use. You can even use that to find out your maybe next best product, how your competitors are doing, pricing. But it does an amazing job with keywords. And we're having like the best results with Helium 10 as a tool. And from recently we started working with DataDive, which kind of gets you like sums up everything that is out there from keywords, and they show you which are the relevant keywords because it combines when you choose the right keyword. It's not, as I said, like important to just have search volume, because if you go to Brand Analytics, if you're a seller, you have Brand Analytics, it's in your Seller Central, and there you can find the relevancy of the keyword. So you have to combine Brand Analytics information with Helium 10. There's basically not a tool that kind of combines everything, but from what we've tested about like 10, 11 different tools, Helium 10 is number one. And then this DataDive, which is actually an add-on, which adds on Helium 10, even though it's a different tool, it gets you like the most important information you can get. So these two tools can do wonders for your listing, and it's absolutely insane, like the differences when you optimize your listings using these two tools versus just using maybe still Google or like some free tool, because you don't want to, you want to be cheap and you don't want to pay, basically,
Yeah,
which a lot
no,
of people don't want to. So
yeah, everyone wants to cut corners, but you know, like Semrush for me in the SEO space, I think you know, using the right data to be able to go after the right choice and keywords and stuff like that is so important. So many people just guess and or be cheap and use the free tools where the data is really poor. So always use your tool. So a couple of good suggestions from Yana on that one. Now, when we were out in Dubai, you were obviously speaking at the event and all that kind of stuff. And I felt that the, you know, as an SEO, I felt like a lot of the crowd were all media buyers and all that kind of stuff. I'm just curious, like, and a lot of people come up to me after the event and they're like, man, SEO's so interesting. You know, I had a meeting with someone I met in Dubai like just an hour ago, and they don't tap into their SEO or anything. They want to talk about it, but I'm just curious how many people come up to you in Dubai after telling the audience what you do, and they're like, "We ain't using Amazon. Like, we should be selling shit on Amazon." Like, was that the case where you went, "These are all media buyers, and they're just using paid traffic, and no one's even thinking about optimizing their Amazon," or was it different for you?
Well, it was definitely like a more of a media buyers type of audience, and kind of more of like affiliates. Also SEO is like not their also source to go to, but that's also very. I mean, I think you got to speak with so many people, because a lot of people that have like amazing like web shots and brands, they don't give a shit about like SEO, right? They're like, I don't care. I don't do that. And then like when they hear you talk, or when I talk about like optimizing your listings, the content, like basically what you do, just I do like on Amazon, people are just like, hey, so I never thought about that. Or the people are just like, hey, so you're so right, but my team would never come up with something like that. Let's talk some more. Can you teach me more about like what you do, and like why should I do things like that? Because it clearly it works. So people like don't have like I kind of think that we kind of plant the seeds, like in their heads, being like, huh, okay, this might be interesting. But what I've seen as a problem here is that people want quick results, like overnight results, and they're like, you need to invest a lot of time. It's a long-term project, right? It's going to pay off, but it's going to be a long-term project. And this is what I see as like a little bit of a downside of what I do as well. Because it's all like, come on, I don't have a lot of time, and people are just getting really impatient, and they've seen all these other results happening overnight, and they don't, they don't want to invest in a service like that. So this is like for like certain portion of people that are like that. And then I'd say like majority is still kind of really interested because it's something new for them. They didn't even maybe think it would work. Maybe would not be relevant for what they do, but it turns out it actually is, and they haven't given it a thought, and you kind of open their eyes. So it's always kind of really rewarding when I hear something like that, not just because I want them to use my service, but because I'm happy that I could show additional like value to these people that maybe could improve their business one day.
But I was just curious to find that out because obviously it's a very interesting source of traffic, if you want to put it that way. Now, typically, what does your normal customer look like? Is it someone who potentially has an e-commerce store that maybe hasn't thought about Amazon, that maybe just wants to drive traffic from Amazon? Or does your customer start in Amazon and then branch out to e-commerce, or is it a mix of both? I'm just curious to know what your actual typical customer looks like.
Right. So our typical customer is, let's say, a seven-figure seller from the US. So they're already in the States. They're successful. They either like hit the wall and they're like, there's nothing more I can do here. Let's just go abroad. Or they're like, okay, I'm so successful here. Maybe they're like eight or nine-figure sellers and been big brands, and they're like, let's go and conquer the world. You know, there's like two type of customers like that. And I'd say that's like about 70% of those are actually already sellers. But ever since COVID, we've got like more and more inquiries from big e-commerces or big brands that are not on Amazon, but they're like, hey, so I want to maximize on my online presence because, you know, it's pandemic. We don't know how this is going to end and when it's going to end. I just want to like be online present like all the time. I've heard great things about this Amazon marketplace. So then they go to us, they kind of launch like all these products, and we do like all the content. We rank them for all the keywords, the content and all of that. So there's like majority are already working on Amazon, but there's a really good portion of them that really see a big potential in Amazon. But usually we don't get anybody that's kind of smaller than like seven figures, because honestly, when you kind of think about, you know, like why would people invest in that, something they don't think about, blah, blah, you know, like if you're not doing great, you're definitely not going to invest in your content. And if you're like a small seller, you're going to choose what you're going to invest in. And if you're like a bigger seller, you're like, oh, okay, let me like see what else I can do for my brand. So let's focus on my content. I don't think that like, you know, somebody who's like doing like five, six figures on Amazon thinks that content is relevant. I kind of find that as like with a more sophisticated sellers, they're like, okay, let's now invest in this, you know, or somebody who's worked with someone before and seen results with SEO, and those people will be like, hey, we should do SEO again, you know? So basically that's how it works with us.
Certainly in our space from the SEO point of view, you know, people are out there looking to target other countries just to get more traffic. And it's crazy not to. I think a lot of people don't realize, like, they're obsessed with the little location you're in. They don't think about what if I got this shit done in five other countries or whatever it's going to be. You know, would I get a much wider audience? And, you know, I certainly see that from an SEO point of view. And you know, helping people tap into a more international audience. But is there any untapped audience or places? So say someone's doing really well in America, seven figures, they tick all those boxes and they're doing amazingly well. Where is the next big market out with the kind of UK? What is there somewhere that you're like, this one is the one? I know it will probably differ depending on the thing, but is there another place out there, like somewhere weird that gets a lot of traffic? Where is the go-to place?
So this is really interesting. So apart from, you know, UK and the US and Germany being the biggest, let's say, Amazon marketplace and one of the biggest e-commerces in the world, what is really interesting, let's say if you want to get into Amazon and you have already like your UK, US listings, is actually UAE, so Dubai, basically. And Middle East and Saudi Arabia are like getting so crazy about like e-commerce. I've found out that their Sheikh of Saudi Arabia, he invested $1 trillion in the development of e-commerce in their country. So it's going to be really insanely big and like huge potential for everyone. But so far, what we've seen, it works, and it's kind of a little secret. It's like the UAE marketplace home decor category. So home decor category has maybe a couple of thousands of products. Probably after this podcast, it's going to be like 550,000 products. But basically in the US, you have like 70,000 products in home decor category. UAE, it just has a little bit of that, and it's a really high demand. And that's because in Dubai, a lot of people are expats, and they, you know, rent empty apartments. They need furnishings, and Dubai is somewhat expensive, and they don't have like a lot of competitors. And literally, if you can offer just, you know, like a little bit, you know, pricing for like maybe like those 5 dirhams less than whatever you can find in a store, like that could be a total win category for you in UAE for now. I don't know when this is going to change, but not a lot of people are aware of that. And especially it's cool because you don't need any translations, because you'll be targeting expats. You're not targeting the local population, so you don't need translated that to Arabic. So you can just leave it as it is. And the home decor category is something which is really, really cool to be in right now.
Interesting. I was always just looking for that little golden nugget. One other thing, obviously, when you're optimizing all these listings, and this may be the dumbest question ever, bear in mind I've never done this. If a person out there is listening in and going, fuck, you know, this makes a lot of sense. You know, there's a lot of traffic on Amazon. You know, I could either try and rank my own shit or get Yana to do it or whatever. Like, do you have to own your own products, or could I go on the Amazon and add a whole bunch of other stuff as an affiliate and then optimize it? How does it, can I, is that possible?
Yeah, you can be a reseller, but that's, when you're basically a reseller, content is not that important because you sell like 50,000 of Disney charms, you know, they'll have like one word or like nothing. And like these resellers, they don't care about content because if they want to do content, it's going to cost them a fortune because they have so many products. So it's much better. I mean, it's good like to be a wholesaler, clearly, if you have like, you know, bunch of products and if you want to be, you know, that type of business. But mostly like private label brands are, you know, the ones that Amazon wants. They give you like tons of like new opportunities, tons of like amazing branding pictures, templates and all that. And I think, of course, with the supply chain and everything is going to get like more and more difficult, especially this year. But when it comes to content, if you're a brand owner, you're going to focus much more on content versus when you're a reseller, then you don't care about content anymore, basically, because it's enough for people to type Disney and something will show up. So it doesn't really matter. You don't have to tell the story. You don't have to use the keywords. Everything you need is basically the brand that you're selling. And that's it.
Interesting. And one other thing I want to talk about, well, there's a few other things, but when someone comes to your website, goes to services, we can see you do your listing optimization, blah, 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 all of the stuff that you would expect to see. But what is, for me, I love new technology, new gadgets, but the translation of follow-up emails, you know, using automation, doing all of that kind of stuff, how does that work? Surely when you use technology and you've got all these different languages and stuff, is that not going to fuck things up, you know, mess it all up or anything like that? You know, when you know, you've got all different languages and you're using one system, like, it's just, it baffles me, like, when you're doing automatic email sequences, what kind of software are you using? Because it must obviously have the ability to read in all different languages. Am I overthinking this? Am I making this too complicated in my head?
No. But I mean, sellers, like, they like for the follow-up emails, they use their own tools. Like, they can use the, what's it called? You have like PipeDrive, you have like, what's it called? Not MailChimp, but the
ActiveCampaign.
Right. You have like tons of like different tools you can use to get your email sequences. Yeah. But it can all be in the settings. You can put that all, so it sends like this to the French customers, to German customers, right. Because like in the Seller Central, you have that all divided according to the country. So it's not all going to be like big, like mumbo jumbo, like, you know, like the German, UK, US, France, UAE. It's going to be like every country has its own store. It's exactly how you have like Amazon.de and Amazon.us.com. Right. So those are like two completely separate. So it's not going to be a big mess. And this is also how they send follow-up emails. You can like download a list of your, clients, whatever, and then you use the French follow-up sequence to be sent to these customers. So it's not all going to be like one, like jammed and packed into like one big, you know, file.
What?
No.
What I was thinking is, like, I've got an Amazon.co.uk site, for example. Then I get you to translate it into five different languages. And then I'm expecting my ActiveCampaign to understand what fucking language that person said. What the hell happens there?
You know what? Amazon is actually developing. They have, like, this great NLP tool. And they're developing this like AI mind-blowing new thing they're working on, which will be able to do that. And I'm sure they will do a fantastic time, a fantastic something. I don't know when this is going to unroll, but it's going to be probably like in a couple of years. So this is like, but and I'm talking about like high quality AI, you know, mind blowing stuff, you know, and this is something that we'll be able to recognize. Up until now, there's probably been like, you know, a couple of tries, but they kind of failed. So this is unfortunately something you have to still do manually. Like you cannot do like Google translations and then expect to be like fantastic content that connects with your audience or like have keywords involved as well, you know, because a lot of times, and also like we've got this guy with like 1,000 products and he wants us to do translations for that, just like some kids' toys and some towels, I don't know what. And his whole Shopify website was done by just random Google Translate from like the US, which was still not good. It was also kind of machine kind of put together. And then they just did a Google Translate for like Germany. And that was a disaster because like it didn't mean anything. I'm like, you could just kind of completely erase this website from Google because you're not going to get ranked for anything because it just doesn't make any sense. No keywords, nothing. He was just like, we just wanted to have like, you know, a sentence or two about a product, you know? And people just use the machine translation on that sort of text, or even better one, to just translate it, and it doesn't make any sense. You don't want, and I always say that because people don't usually speak other languages. They don't actually care what it says in other content because they don't understand it. So they're like, why should I care? But basically, you don't want to sound like a Chinese seller selling in the US marketplace because this is how your content sounds in all the other languages. And then people are like, oh, no, I don't want to sound like that, you know? Because people don't understand that. I mean, what if you treat your content in your native language one way, then why do you mistreat it in any other language you don't understand? Like, it's equally important, right?
Yeah. Especially when there's large volumes coming from potentially some of these countries, so...
Yeah, I mean, people don't know, but, like, you know, when it comes to, like, Amazon, you have, like, US, and then you have Germany, and then you have Japan. Japan is a really, really interesting marketplace, but literally like no competitors because of the alphabet and everything. I mean, it's a different planet and people freak out. And you also have to have like a very, very specific product for the Japanese marketplace. Like the usual products don't sell so well in Japan. There's going to be some like quirky, weird products, you know, that will do fantastic, but people are just, you know, just they're really afraid of the language barrier. That's, I think, the biggest problem. Because PPC is super cheap. They're literally like no competitors. They do FBA. I mean, it's really, really good marketplace if you have the right product. If you don't have it, then it's not going to work.
Jeez. Good information for anyone wanting to jump in and get into an easy market. But you need to overcome the alphabet thing.
You don't really have a good niche for the Japanese marketplace, but people have been tremendously successful on it.
Yeah. Another question I've got, and we're always asked it, is SEOs, and I know you can't answer this specifically, but if someone comes to you tomorrow and says, Yana, sort me out, I want you to rank me for these search terms on Amazon, how long does that take? Is it 3 months, 6 months, a year? How long does that stuff take?
Well, I would say anywhere between probably not less than 3 months. I wouldn't say 2 months. 2 months, maybe if you don't have a lot of competitors, maybe that will kind of do something. But if you're like in a highly competitive niche, I would say like anywhere between probably like 3.5-4 months till 6 months. But probably like between like 4 or 5 months is like when you're gonna see the ranking and you'll see what happens if you place these keywords and ranking. I mean, when you place them the right way, of course. If not, then nothing is gonna happen. And what's really, I forgot one important thing that's kind of interesting. If you wanna do like any of the Mexican marketplace, which is like a lot of US sellers do, like you always have, so we have like this front end listing, but you have like the back end, like you do in SEO, right? So in back end, we always put like Spanish keywords and then you get ranked for that because of the huge Hispanic population in the US. And then if you sell in Canada, you do the same just with French keywords in back ends as well, because this is how you get ranked. Because a lot of people ask me like, hey, so should we do like French translations in Canada? Should we do this and that? I'm like, no. What we've seen that works is basically front end listing stays the same. It's same US English, but you just put French keywords and that works like a charm. You don't have to waste your money. I'm just, you know, not being my biggest fan here, but you don't have to use anybody's services. You can just use the backend keywords. And sometimes that's enough for you to get ranked for those also as well with the other speaking part of population.
Interesting stuff. And once you get someone ranking well, does it stick or is that something you need to continue working at? Because again, like SEO, we've got competitors who, you know, do pretty much what we've done and then you've got to do something else and do a bit more. Is it kind of the same or how do
you
work?
Yeah, of course, it is the same, but nobody wants to do it. Like, you know, every 6 months, you should optimize your listing. You should double check if there are like new keywords, how are you ranked? Maybe something is banned, you know, like things change, you know, like it really, you know, like something that was like kind of cool 2 months ago, it's maybe not cool anymore. But I never recommend anyone to like optimize or to, you know, like redo the listings or anything. There's like less than 6 months. There's like really no need for that. But people just, you know, like they set it and forget it. This is what I've seen with content on Amazon. They just, they never revisit their listings. They're like small percentage of sellers that will actually do that. This is absolutely what you should do. But people just don't pay attention to that. And then that can cost them a lot of, you know, things sometimes.
Yeah. Nah, make sure you're keeping on top of it. But one other little bit I want to talk to you and then I will let you go because I appreciate all the golden nuggets you've got. So you've obviously grown this business and you mentioned that you've got all of these different staff talking in all these different languages. Is this like totally like you obviously own the business? Is it all like kind of outsourced? You don't have an office? Like how does your business operate like on a day-to-day basis?
Right. So nothing is outsourced. Everything is in-house. We are a remote team. It's really difficult to have a remote team in different countries, but most of the translators are located in Europe. We do have some in Mexico and Japan, but we can like, you know, we can make it work with them because they're not a big team. Like the biggest part of employees is in Europe. So basically it's quite a, you know, it's a unique type of business because it's fully remote with so many people. So it's really hard to navigate sometimes and people miss like seeing each other and actually, you know, getting to know each other in person. That makes a huge difference. So I try to kind of, you know, fly everyone once a year to Belgrade. This is what I did in December. And it was fantastic. Like 3 days, everybody, you know, like spent together, got to know each other. And then there are people just like, oh, you're like so annoying on Slack, but I love you in person, you know? And that's kind of something really important. And it changes your perspective. And then people bond more. But apart from that, for instance, like what I do when it comes to a remote team, like I have like a Google Sheet. And then I have like everybody's like birthdays, boyfriends, husbands, whatever, you know, dogs. So every now and then I ask them like on a private question, you know, and I'm like, hey, so how's your, I don't know, you know, somebody was sick or, you know, somebody was on vacation. I asked them about that. So the people feel appreciated and that I actually care because it's not like a regular translation agency. What if you have like this email notification, like, hey, you got a new project and just, you know, like that's it. Like there's no communication. We try to kind of try to make these people feel like they're part of the team and then that we care about them. And then people really appreciate it. And literally we have people that stay with us for almost 2.5 years now. And I'm really proud of that. But I think that's because we built that sort of a culture where we kind of show them that we will go the extra length for them just to keep them in the company, keep them happy with bonuses and stuff like that. But I just think it's like all in those small details, you know, it's not like me forcing someone to play a game on Zoom and that's how we connect. I'm going to be like, hey, so, you know, like you got a baby boy, like here's like a voucher or whatever. And then they send us pictures and stuff like that. You know, it's a really good team communication, but it is really hard. It's really hard to keep them all, you know, happy and invested. But that's why you have to build really, really good procedures, SOPs, everything is like really has to be like top notch, because without that, without like a procedure that everybody follows, especially if there's like so many people, things will fall apart. So that was kind of one of my biggest challenge, to build those procedures and to build a couple of like different layers in the company, from like translators, proofreaders, team leaders, project managers, and our COO basically. And she can run the company for me. So I can basically focus now on the business, not working in the business, which was my main goal like 2 years ago, but it just
Yeah.
happened. And I'm completely happy with that.
Amazing. I've got one last confession to make to you, and I can't remember if I told you in Dubai or not. You know Peter, right?
Yeah.
What did we tell you Peter was? Did we tell you what he was or why he was there?
I don't think so.
So I don't know who knows what, right? So in Dubai, to get Pete, so Peter's a friend of mine. He's got his own psychic business and all
I
that
know
stuff.
what he does. We talk about his business.
But I was telling everyone he was my security guy in Dubai, so that I could get him into all the parties. So I'm messaging,
Oh my God, really? This is
honestly,
how he got in everywhere?
that's how he got into all the parties. So we're like, he's my security guy, and people are like, "You've got a security guy?" Now, after we were just telling people that because we didn't know anyone,
I can't
but
believe that. But you know what?
he,
I would totally buy it. I would totally be like, okay,
oh, he's a
Peter, the
big,
security
guy,
guy. Oh, he's big, he's tall. He's like, he just like, just, use the,
it's like, I was speaking to Keane after it, after I came home, and he's like, "Craig, like, why did you really have a security guy? Like, did you really need it?" And I'm like, "Oh shit, I forgot to tell Keane it was a joke, and I didn't know who else we told you." We were just telling everyone because even the event organizers and stuff, I was like,
I can't
to
believe it. The
Chad
Kian
and stuff,
asked you this. Oh my
yeah,
God.
he asked, he genuinely thought, but we told him it and then we never told him otherwise. But even the event organizers, I'm like, can I have a plus one coming to the party, and all that stuff, and I'm like, it's just my security guy, and they were like, yeah, and that's fine, and no one batted an eyelid. So Peter was getting into all the fucking parties and shit, and Peter just had the standard ticket and all that shit, and obviously he's a marketer and he's a great guy, but we blagged him in everywhere just because people thought he was my security guy. So I just didn't
I
know if
can't believe that.
we
I
told you
don't
that.
think you told me this. I don't think we've had this conversation. We've had some
Oh.
other conversations, but we haven't had this one. Oh my God. But
Oh.
I mean, I would have, it was totally viable. Like, why would anyone doubt that? Because Peter
Yeah.
looks like that. And actually, I remember mentioning Peter to Kian, but he was like, oh yeah, Peter. I mean, he was like, not interested in Peter, because Peter's a security guy, obviously. So like, oh
Poor Peter. So
he hilarious. Oh, well, I have a question for you. Is he gonna be a security guy in Barcelona as well?
yeah, he's coming. He's coming.
As a security
But,
guy, or as a free man?
well, this is what we don't know because I don't know if I'm speaking in Barcelona. I was asked to, but I haven't said yes, and I'm not sure they want me back so quickly. So if I'm not speaking, then we can't use that one. We'll just have to go along as Peter and Craig
Maybe
as
Lazar can
attendees.
hire him as his security. I
Is
have some
Lazar
ideas.
speaking? Yeah.
Yeah, I think
I'm
so. He had
coming.
his hand in
I'm security as well then. Fuck that. Lazard needs two security guys.
his
So
hand. Yeah. Two security guys. Yeah. You're
yeah.
like Kung Fu, and Peter's just big. That's it.
Yeah. We'll go
Yeah,
with
I think. Yeah. I love
that.
it. Like, you scare people with your Scottish accent. This is your
Yeah.
superpower.
Exactly. And the tattoos and all that, people are like,
Oh,
ah, he must be
yeah.
crazy.
You're a
So
celebrity bodyguard, basically.
yeah, I'll do
You're
that.
famous. Famous bodyguard.
But no, so before we do wrap up, where is the where's the best place for people to reach out to you? Is it through your website, which is listed below, or is there a better way to contact you?
So if people want to talk to me, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm like really, I love LinkedIn, and I post like really good content about like generally like content like an e-commerce or like an Amazon. So people can find me there, and I'd love to connect and you know, exchange knowledge or give any advice or visit them here to answer any of the questions, you know, if I had real hair and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm open to anything that people want to ask me, basically. So make sure to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to talk.
Do it. She is open to any questions. We were asking her all sorts of crazy stuff whilst drunk in Dubai and all that stuff, but we'll leave that. That's not clean for the show. But she's a good person and very approachable. That's all I can really say about you, Yana. But I will put the links to your LinkedIn, your website below. And guys, if you need any help, advice, tips, whatever, reach out to Yana. She's doing an amazing job. And if you're in Barcelona, she'll be there as well partying. So do get along. But Yana, for now, thank you very much for coming on. It has been an absolute pleasure. We do have Yana's other half on next week, the lovely Lazar. And we'll be picking his brains about TikTok, which is something I'm not so good at, but I've got a good following, so need to figure out how to monetize it. But yeah, we'll see you for that show. But thank you again, Yana. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure's all mine.
Cheers.